There's just four teams remaining in the hunt for the toilet seat after the first week of A-League finals action, and the Destruction in the Box podcast is here to take you through every wet bandit in the technical area, 16-year-old scoring a worldie, and fan base finally back from the pub. My name's Rudy Etzel. I'm joined this week by Andrew Clark.
G'day, Rudy.
Dan Fisher.
Hello, Rudy.
And Chris Allo. How are you, Chris-o?
G'day, mate. How are you?
I'm not too shabby. We're nearly at the finish line of the season. And since we last spoke, Melbourne Victory finished bottom of the table. So, yeah, we're all in good moods here. That's fair to say.
So I think I think listeners are just going to have to go back and from last week's episode when we sort of previewed the teams in reverse ladder order, you're just going to have to like skip forward past the victory bit to the Newcastle bit and then rewind back to the Newcastle bit. So then that's your 12th and 11th and then sort of 10th onwards.
Yeah, indeed. But we will talk about that a little bit later. We're first going to kick off with our observations as we usually do. And I'm going to go first. And I was pretty keen to get this one away before everyone else nicked it off me. Our good friend and wonderful source of content here at the podcast, Ross Aloisi, back in the news over the weekend. First, he popped up on the coverage in the Brisbane Adelaide game, just angrily barking at the fourth official as he's wont to do. And that was just a classy, like, little throwback moment for us, like a little tug at the heartstrings. But it was the next day that I was particularly interested in when Val Maglaccio has reported that Adelaide United assistant coach Ross Aloisi is being considered as a potential assistant to Ange Postecoglou at Celtic, as well as for the head coach of Western United. And all I've got to say is Ross Aloisi abides, man. He just – the dude abides. It's so good that, we'll be gone, but he'll be keeping on for us. And I know that Scottish football or Celtic fans are flat on the appointment of Ange Postecoglou, but you know, nothing will bring them, you know, nothing will get them over the line more than watching Ross Aloisi, the way he carries on the first Old Firm derby. He'd just be in his element, Roscoe.
And should that not transpire, I can't think of a dressing room more in need of a galvanising force than Western United. So if they need someone, go in there and bring everyone together. We'll go. I think that Ross Aloisi is that man. So long may he reign, whichever league he ends up in.
It was amazing actually to see on the weekend, because it's been a pretty passive sort of season on the sidelines for Ross. He hasn't bobbed up that much, but in a big game, in a big moment, he was right there and just like honestly doing what he does best and just like really making a fourth official's life hell.
I particularly liked about that moment was the Marone sub, like at the very, very end of the game. And so while Adelaide United's making a sub, Carl Viet's there saying to the fourth, he's like, six minutes, mate. It's like, you're literally making a sub. Like, what do you want? What do you want to blow the whistle now? Like, he's not allowed to do that. All good. Good game management by all of them. Clarkie, what's your observation of the past week?
Well, it was announced this afternoon, actually, that 10 Viacom CBS is throwing a few extra bucks in the direction of Football Australia. So 10 and Paramount Plus will become the home of the Australian national teams, both the Socceroos and the Matildas, and the FFA Cup until the end of 2024. So the new deal includes all Westfield Matildas and Socceroos matches outside of the FIFA World Cup finals, plus for the next four seasons, the FFA Cup from the round of 32 onwards. Also, the FFA Cup final will be broadcast on free-to-air television for the first time ever.
That's sick.
So I think all up now that the deal between 10 Viacom, CBS and Football Australia is, I think, rumoured to be around $300 million. More good news for football in this country and ensuring that it gets to more eyeballs with an extended free-to-air television deal with the FFA Cup. Really, really good news.
And Chris is obviously a strong respecter of the FFA Cup, as we've heard in recent weeks.
It's I've said it for years. It's a Mickey Mouse competition, but it's good. It's good when the NPL clubs are involved. I like that. It's just when the A-League teams claim it as some sort of merit. Well, please, you fucking haven't beaten anyone. You've beaten one or two of your peers. But I do like the David versus Goliath aspect of it. I just don't consider there to be any merit in an A-League team winning it.
It just gets a bit boring at the final eight or the final four when all of the fun NPL clubs are gone. It's just like, exactly. Oh, okay, this is just like a round of A-League.
There's nothing actually I like more just about in that Australian football than when like they have a game at like Tuggeranong United or like Bentley Greens, and you can see like the souvlaki smoke over the back of the stand. It's awesome. I love it. So call me the FFA Cup respecter. Dan, what's your observation this week?
Well, in the past, there's been a lot of joy given to the Australian football community from ball kids at particularly out at Gosford, famously. One of them pinched the flag when Tim Cahill was celebrating the goal. I took particular note in extra time because a lot of ball kids at A-League games, like they're kind of like, they're around, they play for a local team or whatever. And it's like, oh yeah, kid, you want to come and do the ball, whatever. Kids at Gosford fucking care. And I was watching them behind the goals during extra time. Like I think Quoll had a bit of a chance at like flash wide in extra time. And the two kids were like standing like next to each other basically. And they're riding every bump, like with the active support and everything. They're like, they're jumping up, their hands are in the air, just really getting involved. Hopefully like not giving the ball back to Federici, you know, that sort of thing. I didn't notice any of that sort of behavior, like, you know, Michael Morone type stuff. It was just good to see like the kids loving it. Unfortunately, they didn't end up having a great night, but
Good
to see all the same.
But yeah, wonderful to see. Chriso, what's your observation this week?
Well, it's fitting that at the final dawn of this podcast that we're now Robbie Slater's finding himself on the Queen's Birthday Honours list. So he's now got the acronym OAM at the end of his name. He's already updated his Wikipedia page, I notice. So look, he's just rising to the top for services to football. So I also Eddie Karnisevic, Australian Socceroos striker, also I think first Australian to win any individual honour of note in the European game. I think back in the mid-80s, he won the Golden Boot in Belgian League. So he won as well. But yeah, Robbie stuck his way on there alongside such luminaries as Mark Beretta and Peter Credlin. So he's found a way. So hats off to you, Bulldog. You've been on it. I don't know how, but it's happened. And
I've got to say, for services to the continuity of our World Cup 2018 campaign.
Yeah.
I've got to say, looking like if you take his record in isolation, it's like he's been working in football for 40 years just about. And he's
that's a while.
I think you're selling the author of The Hard Way short there, Chriso. Did you know he wrote a book in 1990 for The Hard Way?
I didn't, but next time I need some kindling, I'll pick myself up a copy.
It's got one review on Amazon, The Hard Way by Robbie Slater from John Gray in the United States in 2014. It says, grat value for the price.
Grat value. Great job there, Robbie. You've got yourself an award, but it's I don't know. They're given out to fucking anyone, it would seem. So anyway, that's how that goes.
He's been awarded it fair and square. Now fuck off, Chris.
Yeah. I'll shut up then.
All right. Before we move on to the elimination finals, there was as we touched on, fellas, there was a midweek madness game where we were like, wow, there's no way Newcastle beat City. And then Newcastle beat City 2-1. Great times for Newcastle. the headline we should take out of this game, to be honest, is Archie Goodwin's goal. 16 years old and like scoring absolute worldies, Chriso.
Well, it was and it wasn't just the he was out from distance, but he really caressed it. It was beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, usually see those ones from distance sort of hit with violence, like sort of the Fornaroli goal, the sort of like half a week earlier, like you just absolutely smashing the piss out of the bladder there. But it was just exquisitely placed. So there was enough power, obviously, to score from that distance, but it was just beautifully precise.
That's right. And even at that point, you still sort of thought City would find a way to win, but then Apostolos Stamatolopoulos knocking in the winner with about 10 minutes to go. And City, Clarkie, one win in their last five going into finals.
Yeah, it's probably not the kind of form you want going in when you're considered the shortest price odds to take all the chocolates. But look, they're a good enough side to hopefully rediscover some form for their own sakes. I don't want them to rediscover form. Let's just put that very clearly. I said, hopefully they're hopeful. I'm not. Like, I hope this long continues. You can all get fucked.
the mask is off. Things are winding up.
I do, before we move on, I was just gonna say, I did enjoy the winter football vibes of this one. In the rain. And like the coaching staff wearing jackets, and like you can see the players, they've got the long sleeves on, and you can see their breath when they're talking to each other. I do like that. Like
on a Thursday night, and it was no one's home game as well.
Last week also was probably some of the worst weather I've seen in Melbourne in a couple of decades. So it was a proper cold night in Stoke areas.
Yeah. Well, the game was up in Sydney. The game was in Sydney. They couldn't.
Oh well, then
in
cut that fucking bit out then. Okay.
But let's move on to the elimination finals and Central Coast. They just couldn't get the job done against MacArthur. I think all of us just about signposted this as the possible result. They lost 2-0 in extra time.
I thought we were 50-50.
Okay, right.
I reckon we were split up the middle on how this one would go.
All right. Maybe I thought that because I thought that this was going to be the result. and unfortunately for Central Coast, they huffed and puffed, but they just couldn't really blow MacArthur's house down. And really, Clarkie, like, they didn't. It just looked very difficult for them all night, didn't it, Clark?
Just wasn't their night. You know, Simon, Urania, even Alu, not really producing the same amount of chances that you'd expect. Clisby didn't deliver as many dangerous balls into the air, nor was he afforded the space to really participate in any sort of overlapping runs, which he's been pretty good at this season. Yes, I'm giving Clisby some credit. Shut the fuck up, Chriso. But it's one of those games where I don't think they were caught in the headlights so much or maybe overawed by the occasion, but I think the experience in that Bulls lineup, there's a bunch of players in there that have been in these sorts of games before, and they knew what to do in a situation like this. And I guess an Ante Milicic type team, and the way that they're set up is made for this kind of knockout football. Just be hard to break down and then take your opportunities when presented. And they executed masterfully, really.
Yeah, we sort of had been saying that about them all season, that they just want to squeeze the life out of a game and then strike while they can. And that's more or less, Chriso, what they did. They just waited and waited and waited, and then in the 93rd minute, bounced.
They did. You have to say, on balance, they were the better team throughout. They controlled the players is their remit. They did struggle for probably, like, they had, there was only the one genuine chance in the before extra time. When I say genuine, the one shot on target by either team was James Meredith's fantastic header, which required a brilliant save going down low, Mark Birigidi early in the match.
All the other chances were like flagged for offside.
Yeah,
I think there was a goal each side that was overruled, but it was because they were offside.
So, yeah.
Only one legitimate shot on target in the 90.
It wasn't a game characterized by a heap of chances, but certainly just lacking that both sides sort of threatening, but lacking that bit of quality in the final third for that first 90 minutes anyway. But yeah, they just strangled them. And that's, like Clarkie said, that's what they've got the players set up to do that.
It was very professional sort of setup, and
it was.
Yeah, like you said, the experience of the of the MacArthur guys was just they're just super experienced side, and it really showed. Dan, the main question I've got about this on the Mbombo goal is how was Franich allowed to get that ball away?
Yeah, it was. It felt like they thought they had him covered in the corner there, and he just it was one of those plays where you said, "Oh, Franich might just like play this out off a defender to get the corner or whatever," but he just had like this little slither of space that he managed to find Susieta in the box. It should never have been able to happen. Like, he was completely boxed in, and that should have, you know, gone out for a corner or even a throw. But yeah, they didn't close that off that little gap enough. And it was a grave mistake there to let that ball out, and it resulted in the goal that broke their backs.
Yeah, pretty much. It was always going to be tough for them without Bozanic. He's been such a talisman for the season, Clarkey. They just never looked like properly settled and in the game. I think they'd beaten MacArthur every other time they'd played them this season, but they just couldn't do it. And to be fair, the fans were amazing and thoroughly deserved their home final, didn't they? I mentioned before, back from the pub was the sign, Clark.
Yeah, you know, that was great. It's the fans don't forget, and they've been waiting a long time to pull that one out. And the people of Gosford turned up in droves, and it's a shame that it didn't turn out the way they all would have hoped. But there's still plenty to like about this Central Coast team, and I hope that the fans come back next year and continue to support them, because if they can hold together the vast majority of this squad, this isn't just a flash in the pan season from CCM. They're proper back and have got the ability to continue to compete in the top six in this competition.
Mm. Well, let's essentially review their season now, I suppose. The first little note we've got written down just says, "What a season, Stadge for PM," and fair play to him. Like, he got an absolute song out of that team, and they'd won four of the last five, three of the last four, Wooden Spoons, Crisso. So, to get them a home final. I mean, they didn't win it, so you can't, you can't be mad about that. It was an amazing achievement for them to get where they were.
Brilliant. With a squad no one rated, with a coach who'd, you know, he obviously come through some turbulent times with his in terms of his end of tenure at the Matildas, and he's gone and had taken the job at Gosford, where he's led him to a spoon, and though it did look like he'd improved them last year and made a couple of signings, obviously most notably Urania on the eve of the season, which I think actually it was Janotta who didn't do anything. It was Urena was really the one, but he's just with an unfancied squad. He's got something out of Bozanic, who no one sort of rated, you know, well, not for many years, and no one thought he was going to be an impact player. And what a leader he was for them. He's just done a great job there. And the place was rocking on the weekend, and that's what you want to see. You want to see the crowds there, the Ospreys, you know, circling ever so menacingly. That's what you want to see at Gosford. So it was
on people.
it was a good feeling back at the stadium.
And because on that, Chris, so we talked not just about Bozanic. I think that was actually the whole thing with Central Coast this year. Everyone going into the season thought that we knew about all of their players because we had seen enough of Bozanic at this level. We had seen enough of Tonyuk at this level. Yep. And we thought we knew what De Silva was all about. But Stadge got them up and about and having career best seasons. Clisby had a career best season. Stensness went to another level, unearthing some of these great kids, Nisbet, Bowman, to name a couple. Obviously, Kowal went to another level as well. So it was just to a man, you would like. I can't think of a Central Coast player who like didn't improve this season, or and on top of that, most of them had the best seasons that they've ever had in the A League.
Yeah, even guys like Matt Simon,
absolutely.
Who you didn't just think was a known quantity. You thought he was a spent force at this level, but he scored 10 or 11 goals.
Simon has had as good a seasons as this. But he's so far removed from that, it was so improbable that he would do what he did this season.
Yeah,
exactly. He'd curbed the shithousery, as I said earlier on the season, or channeled it. He wasn't all just looking to get into fights and elbows. He was channeling a lot of that aggression into leadership. Like, right. Matt Simon is still going to Matt Simon, and he's still going to bite people if you come at him.
He's still going to yell at Ziggy Gordon in the face.
Yeah. He's going to still stand over you if he feels aggrieved, but we saw it a lot less, and we saw a lot of him. A couple of times you saw him, like, he was about to go off, and then he would just channel that aggression into barking orders at his team, getting him whipped up, and, you know, all credit to him.
It was almost statesmanlike, really, and that, like, would have, like, I was about to say, it would have felt laughable to say that at the start of the season, and Dan, you're literally laughing at it right now.
Well, that's because it felt like that. Well, I'm actually reminded of a moment on in the game on the weekend. I can't even remember who the player it was that went down, but Matty Simon clattered one of his own teammates. I just can't remember who it was right now, and he started yelling at the medical staff for coming out to give the bloke treatment. Because I think it was something around time waste or whatever, but I think the game got stopped. Like, so literally the medical staff had to come out. I think the game got stopped because the player was on the ground. I wish I could remember who that was. But
it's so funny. It's vintage Matty. It's so good. I'm so glad we got a proper sort of, you know, like an Indian summer sort of season out of him. Very, very cool. The biggest issue they've got going forward was Clarkie. You said, like, if they can keep these guys together, then, like, they're proper back. But I mean, Alu Kuol, we already know, is off to Germany. Ruan Tongik is apparently in demand. I've heard there's rumours as well. And then Daniel De Silva, I think, I don't know if it's official, but there's word that he's off to MacArthur. It would be really handy for Central Coast Mariners if those players, particularly the players that were going to other A-League clubs, you know, if they could get some money out of that, because they really need to, you know, grow the economy, Chriso.
You know, they do need to grow the economy. And that's the model that they have as a smaller club is going to be that development of players and on-selling them. You know, it hurts nobody, benefits everybody. You know, that's what they're going to be able to do.
They've benefited everybody in Australian football, really, over the
they
gym.
Have. Like, that's true.
It's fair to say. So, I think
Urania is to this stage without a deal. I'm pretty sure it was mentioned in the coverage about, oh, you know, will they or won't they be able to keep him? Or was it even, you know, has he? Are they going to re-sign him?
Hopefully for the league's sake, really, they can keep, you know, most of the core of these guys. And even if they don't, like, you've got to back Stojic from here to do a lot with what he's got, because, like you said, Dan, they pretty much every single player, like, went to another level this season. Obviously, massively quality Stoj.
And hopefully they can actually, with their finishing position, there might be a bit of chance of attracting some new talent, whether it's new visa signings or some players from, you know, some returning Australians or whatever. It's not like you're going on the sell job going, we'll pay you, but we finished last 5 out of the last 6 years. It's like, hey, we finished third.
The sell job now is like, look at our very recent history.
Don't look at anything else, you know, but look, it's a start. And who knows? I mean, also Central Coast, you know, with the academy there, the center of excellence, no doubt we're going to see another kid or two pop up, because it's always the way with Central Coast. So, you know, look, plenty to be excited about.
Very, very much so. Let's move on to Brisbane Adelaide. The Tommy Urich Show, fellas. All season we were kind of like, I remember actually talking specifically, Dan, saying, do they need to actually stop picking Tommy Urich and just play with the young guys up front? And Tommy Urich, he showed us, and he also very much showed Tom Aldred.
No, he absolutely did. The young guys largely weren't available. Cassini Yenge didn't get up for this one. He was still injured. Not so much a young guy, but Craig Goodwin in a different role, twisted his ankle training, so he wasn't up for it. Al Hassan Toure wasn't actually going to be in the match day squad and was bought in because they ended up a few soldiers down up front. Tommy Urich was an absolute force early in the game, scoring two goals within 20 minutes. Never doubted having him at the top there for the Reds, and it pays off once again.
Yeah, indeed.
The first goal was a pretty direct ball from Ryan Strain on that right side and into Tommy. He's chested it down, legally murdered Aldrin and scored. But it did, unfortunately for me, it was the cringiest bit of commentary I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
When Speedy said, look at that Route 1, Route 1 football. And then Andy Harper said, Route 1, it's more like Route Butte. And yeah, that was the worst thing I've ever heard. And I expect to see him get his Order of Australia medal next year. So
I did hear that. Sometimes you just got to let the commentators, do what they want in those moments. But it was awesome. How good was the touchdown? How good was the hit? And then when he motored away from Tom, he looked like I don't know if you remember that when Gareth Bale playing at left back for Spurs in the Champions League against Maicon, where he looked at Maicon and he went, I can have you, kicked the ball and just ran around him. That's what he looked like. Tommy Urich, of all guys, looked at Tom Aldred and gone, yeah, I reckon I've got him.
Three strides from Tommy Urich and he had a yard and a half on Aldred and he's like, okay, this is fine.
Yeah, Tommy Aldred, he had the head down. When you've just got to go. It's your turn, and you've got to sprint, and you stick the head down. Just really suck the big ones in. Tommy Aldred was like that. Two strides in before he'd crossed the halfway line, and the distance just got further and further.
He's put his head down, and when he first looked up, I think he was hoping to see him a little bit closer than he was.
Exactly. Yeah.
Aldred simply needed to react faster and just pull him down straight away. As soon as he's being turned there, just pull him, tug him, and take the yellow. But
Meredith did in the Arthur game. You needed to do just that. Danger, danger, bang.
Yeah. But the thing is, he was actually nowhere near him enough on either of the goals to even have the cynical foul. That's why he got his first, that's why he got his yellow card in the 65th minute. He actually wasn't close enough to Urich to even do that.
Yeah.
That first one especially, though, it's I don't know how someone like him just gets his positioning so badly wrong.
I just think he was a bit out of shape, that's all. But that's also a bit of match practice too. What did he miss, 7 of the last 9 or something like that?
There's a little bit of sharpness. Urich isn't known for being fleet of foot or super agile or anything as well. Just and we sort of signposted this recently, didn't we? Well, you signposted specifically, Dan, saying that is it worth bringing this guy? He came back and went off with a hamstring, and he'd already been out for a few weeks with a hamstring. Was it worth rushing him back in the first place?
When Kai Truwen was playing really well, I think it's definitely a decision that had large consequences for Warren Moon and the Roar, and it's one that they're going to have to live with and learn from. I saw that after the game, Aldred approached it on social media and was like, look, mentally, I felt there and I was ready, and clearly physically I wasn't. He's owned up to it and gone, I thought I was ready for this game, but I wasn't. I was out of my depth there. And sorry,
it's tough though. No player is going to turn down the opportunity. And if the health, the conditioning staff are if they give the tick, I don't think any player's going to go, look, I don't think so. You're going to go, fuck yeah, let's go. But he's shown a bit of leadership there by owning it and putting his hand up. I mean, he had to. It was the direct reason why they're no longer in finals.
But I think it would have been a tough call to not start someone of that stature. I think that's a tough call that can be made. It's not an impossible one to make. I think it was the easier call in a way to start the experienced guy, one of the better players in your team.
He starts or doesn't play at all, doesn't he? Because I don't think you pull Tom Aldred off the bench. If he's good enough to be named, then he starts. And I think that's probably what they've done there.
And how do you get him into this final series? So say they, you know, everything goes well and Kaitrun plays it, you know, as part of the back three in that game and they're all win it. And then they, you know, they play the next week. Tom Aldred has now like not played 8 of the last 10. You know, you're not getting him into the squad at any stage. So you're either committing to being with him or without him, you know, once you name that squad for the first final. They went with him, it backfired, unfortunately.
Didn't it? They also, like, I mean, for all the talk about Tommy Urich and Tommy Aldred there, Brisbane definitely could have sent this to extra time. They were absolutely battered Adelaide in the second half.
Well, first of all, they got the goal that closed the gap early enough. Parsons' impact off the bench, you know, was good. Got that header from the dead ball. You know, the 56 minute, it gave them enough time to work with it, and they got to work, and they absolutely had a number of chances to have sent this to extra time.
Yeah, Corey Brown, especially. I think almost everything was going through him, and he was just delivering ball after ball into the area, trying to link up play. So, and it was all Brisbane second half, but to Adelaide's credit, they copped the barrage and they've come out victorious. So, you know, they'll get a lot from that. Yeah, they were clinical when asked to be in the first 20 minutes, but then absorbed a huge amount of pressure in that second half. So that's definitely something to build on, because, you know, we also said with Adelaide, you know, they conceded a lot at the back end of games this season, didn't they? And they've really put that to bed in a do or die fixture. So they'll get a ton of confidence from that result.
Probably
they're going to need it.
Yeah, probably been a team that's probably underwhelmed of latter half of the season, but to go up to Dolphin Land and without your best player who hurts, rolls his ankle in training, and to come away with the chocolates in a knockout, it's fucking huge. So well played.
It's their first away finals win in club history. Yeah. So that's an awesome. Yeah.
That's a massive win.
I think really, Chris O's man goal was like we laugh about it a bit, but he was genuinely stiff.
He had
not to have scored. He had a couple on the one play.
He knows
where to be.
He knows where the goal goals are, but
the Mabrato bit that's the problem.
Yeah.
And Dorigo as well, Clarkie. One of them got past Dalyanov, but Dorigo cleared one off the line from goal.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
It was same play.
Yeah, it was right towards the end there. But let's, Brisbane Roar, let's review their season. Good start, good finish. Fell apart a touch in the middle, but that did enough either side, really. We spoke about in the Central Coast review about how they'd coaxed career best seasons out of guys we thought were, you know, known quantities. Corey Brown, Dan. He's had a career best season there. Is it the new hair?
By some distance, I would have thought. I thought he was a serviceable and, you know, A-League standard player in his time at Brisbane Roar in the past. Didn't have a great time of it when he played for the Victory. So when he went back to Brisbane, I don't think too much was expected. But, his level of improvement, not only on the best that he had shown previously, but the fact that he was in, you know, if you're ranking his seasons from best to worst, he was probably like going on some sort of decline. So to peak like this was, it was a really good season by Corey.
I think he's got like the third most assists in the league this season.
Mm. Yeah.
Which is pretty awesome. Damn good from a wing back position you know.
And he had it was his ball that to Parsons that got them back in this final that we've been talking about. So he's been very, very important for them. Really the story of the season for these guys though is our boy Dan Zaki. Chris O.
And he's I guess low profile, you know, just a kid from Japan who no one knew, you know, squat about, and he's come in and made a huge impact. He's
Masato Kudo was the big name signing coming out of Japan from them. He was meant to be a big deal.
And he was, you know, rarely if at all cited. Yeah, but so Denzaki, you know, I know though, and I believe Warren Moon was talking midweek about how, oh, you know, we're right into him, we want him to stay, but he's on loan, and you feel like it's going to be a pretty big loss because you feel like the parent club will take him back and be wrapped with the experience he's gained in Australia. Mm. He's just got better as the season went along as well. Like he was energetic always, but his quality really shone through there. And you know, aside from Corey Brown, he'd have to be a shout for probably one of their players of the season. The award night. Yeah,
yeah, those would be my top two for sure. Mm-hmm. In whichever order you want to put them in. I think it's fair to say, Clark, Warren Moon did just a great job this season. Like this is not a deep squad. This is not a stacked squad, and for him to get them to a semi-final, seriously impressive.
He's done a wonderful job, really. His knowledge of the local landscape there in Queensland has really held him in good stead there. And probably you'd be forgiven for anyone outside of Queensland to be like, you know, who is this guy? But obviously very highly regarded in Queensland football circles, and sort of really went about his business in a very understated way, to the point where I reckon a lot of fans probably didn't realize that Brisbane were in the mix for top four up until they were there.
Yeah.
And absolutely, as you said, squeezed every little last bit out of a squad that probably didn't have as much star power or maybe wasn't as expensive as other A-League squads. Let's not forget they also lost Scotty McDonald in the middle of the season as well.
Got very neutral.
he's done a very good job, and like it's I want to see him carry on, and I want to see if Brisbane can build off this. Obviously, I think there's going to be some losses. Danzaki, probably the first one. They've already said Jamie Young can go.
But no, actually, Warren Moon actually cleared that up during the week. I think he said he's a required player. So I don't know what the mix-up there was, whether it was bad information coming out at first or whether it was a change of heart from Brisbane. I'm not sure, but Moon cleared up during the week and said that he's a required player.
Maybe they saw him ship a goal at his near post and felt nostalgic for the old days.
Yeah, we can't let that go too easily.
Yeah. We didn't bring it up, but yes, he did.
But the kids that came through again, the local talent, your Alex Parsons, your Jordan Courtney Perkins, Kai Truen, you know, these are probably all guys that Warren Moon knows from I guess, you know, Queensland football, and they've looked great this year. The return of Josh Brindle South, young Josh Brindle South, back into A-League circles.
Mm, great story. Really cool. It's cool to get them. Loads of games at Dolphin Stadium as well. Just better setup than Suncorp, really, for the A-League.
Just on a cavernous swamp.
And you can't not draw some sort of correlation between the two. That they've been better. They've had people there, people who, you know, can be involved in a match day experience. Like it's great. It's great to watch on telly. It must be great to be there. Yes, it's a bit out of the way from I think an hour from central Brisbane. But it'd be good if they could, I don't know. They just need to stay out. They need to either get a 10,000-seater in the CBD or close to, or get rid of Brisbane Roar, become the Sunshine Coast Dolphins. And that would be something I think everyone would support.
The Dolphin Roar.
Go Dolphins. Yeah, I'm sure that there's no one attached to the Brisbane Roar brand.
Especially not that guy with the season one jacket from the other week.
Oh, that was cool. Yeah, well, hey, he's a Queensland guy. He'll follow him anywhere in the state. Oh, yeah, that's right. just don't right. take him across the road to Coolangatta.
The 4X Dolphins. There we go.
It was actually sort of across the two games from the weekend, it was just a heaving atmosphere, I think, at both stadiums, both at Gosford and Brisbane. They were the right size stadiums for the occasion. It was good.
Yeah.
You know, remember when the A-League was good?
Yeah.
This season?
Yes, I do. Yeah. I do remember that.
What was also a heaving vomit when MacArthur won?
Oh, MacArthur. All right, so do we give MacArthur much of a shot against City? Is that game is going to be in Melbourne, right?
We don't
know. Not sure yet, are we? Not sure.
Like it's scheduled for Melbourne. They haven't said otherwise yet.
I know.
We don't know exactly what's happening regarding, you know, like I think it seems probable that there will be no crowd if it's in Melbourne.
Well, the AFL's moved their games out of metropolitan Melbourne this weekend, haven't they? The two games scheduled for
There's even an AFL game in Geelong, which hypothetically could have crowds that won't have crowds.
Yeah. I assume
the powers that be will wait to the last possible minute and then panic and then fuck a whole bunch of shit up and then
try and get Skitty over the border at 1 a.m.
Yes. I don't know. Are we going to do the like tips previews like in a sequential order or
it's kind of why I brought it up. It's hard to see MacArthur getting that done again. I remember it's just hard to forget the memory of them getting smoked off the park by City in 15 minutes. Like they're trying to do their strangulation thing and City were like, brush aside, see you later. And I think like City, they're obviously not quite the City they were at that point, but I still think they'll have enough to get that one done and do it well. 2-1 for me. What do you reckon, Clarkie? City MacArthur.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough one. I mean, yeah, as you said, for MacArthur just to absorb a whole bunch of pressure again against what is the best team in the league is a massive ask. But at the same time, maybe this is where, you know, City entering in finals and all the expectation weighs heavy on them. Look, I reckon it's going to be a pretty cagey affair. I reckon that it's going to be just a single goal that separates them, but I will give that to City.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Dan?
I actually think MacArthur might do this one. City's form is
spicy. I like it.
City's form is disguise.
No. Okay. Hear me out. City's form is proper no good. So I'll give them the one against Brisbane because they actually did rest half of their squad. So when they lost 3-0 to Brisbane sort of late in the season, I'll give them that one. They were managing their squad and then they ended up unexpectedly not having a game against Newcastle that week. So like the way they were managing their squad, they probably didn't need to do in the end, but they didn't know that at the time. Give them one result. But still, they had one win in their last five in the league. They don't have McLaren. They don't have Good and they don't have Metcalf. So that's three different parts of the park that they've lost key personnel. And since those guys have left, it hasn't meshed really well for them. And I'm genuinely concerned about City's form in general. I think the way that... I give MacArthur some learnings out of the time City did play them off the park early and think that they'll apply those and do MacArthur things, strangle a game, and for the Bants, make the grand final from sixth.
what about you, Chris?
It's going to sound like I'm just copying, but I was going to say exactly what Dan said. I think that MacArthur are a show here, and I think they will win. You've got their best attacker or their best midfielder for this season and their best defender out. City, that is, their form of the last 6 weeks hasn't been good. And I reckon MacArthur's going to MacArthur. And they're on a game that's very, very likely, given there's no AFL in Melbourne this week, game that's very likely to be on neutral, if not MacArthur's home turf. So let's see. But I think that City are going to get done here, and I'm going to give it 2-1 to MacArthur.
I reserve the right to change my mind, though, because Derbyshire went off looking a bit proppy. If Derbyshire's not getting up for this game, I absolutely change my tip.
Well, Paul,
they aren't scoring without him.
Emergency pod recording. Yeah. That's my tip. Because I tipped MacArthur last week, and I got home with him, so I'm sticking with him.
Imagine if they had to play this at MacArthur.
Like, yes, that would be so funny.
Imagine finishing first and then having to play away to the team that finished sixth.
Well, the AFL is not playing in Melbourne this week, so I just think that could be a guide.
They have to go to New South Wales, won't they? Because they're the most pliable state government with this sort of stuff. They couldn't just go to Queensland or something. I'm pretty sure New South Wales are like much more pliable.
The city are a bio threat to every other state bar Gladys. So, yeah.
Maybe they'll go to like Newcastle or something, so it takes as far away from MacArthur's home territory as they can.
They can get in that state.
Yeah. No, the VAR don't work so good up there.
Yeah.
Before that game on Saturday night, is Sydney v Adelaide. This one feels a lot less likely. You can make an argument for the away team here. I can't see. Unfortunately, I'd love to see it happen, but I can't see any way Adelaide can possibly get this done. Sydney are just in Sydney mode here, and Adelaide, I think, will unfortunately. And I believe Craig Goodwin won't get up for it. I think. Yeah, so tough for Adelaide. I think Sydney are going to do this 3-0 and just march into the finals. What do you reckon, Clark?
Killbots, 2-0. Mm. Nothing overly fancy, but Lafondra, probably Bobo, both going to get on the score sheet and just fucking killbot their way to the grand final.
All the way there.
I'm the same. I just don't see how Adelaide match up to them It was a great win on the weekend, but it's fucking Sydney. It's a final. They've got Lafondra back, like, and he's, you know, like they look good. Like they look good, and they didn't even seem worried by their Socceroos absentees. I think it was only for the one game they had to do it, but they just didn't look like they missed a beat at all.
Hmm. Yeah, indeed. And Chriso.
Yeah, killbots. They will killbot, and that's a 3-1 victory to Sydney.
Mm. That's nice of you to give Adelaide a goal. Dan, you've got a shout out close to your heart.
Yeah, well, I've got one more preview to do because tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Australian Eastern Time, Mighty Curaçao have their home leg against Panama. Now, they lost during the week 2-1, but crucially got a very late away goal. So they take on those Dogs of Panama. Sorry, I'm getting way too, like, you know, like my Curaçao sort of you know, national pride, very misplaced national pride, got the better of me there. You know, shout out to our Panamanian listeners. But yeah, I'm tipping Curaçao to win that 1-0 now that Daryl Latchman is back in the squad, which I found interesting. Perth Glory didn't even give it a shout out on their social media, but Daryl Latchman actually got a call up and played off the bench against Panama the other day. They conceded a minute after he came on.
I suspect their digital content producers are on holiday, if I'm honest. Yeah. With you, Dan. Perth Glory, their admin guys are like, but what if Daryl Latchman comes on for Curaçao? They're like, yeah, no, that's fine. I'm not worried about that.
No. Hand in your iPhones. Yeah. I'm going on holiday.
Indeed. So yeah, that does it for us on this upcoming semi-final weekend. Just a reminder to get your tips into us for the Golden Gallops. We'll be recording those, I think, next week. So that's at gg.ditb.co. So do give us your hints for those. We'd love that. You can find us at DITB Pod on Twitter and Instagram, or search for Destruction in the Box on Facebook. Shoot us an email, contact@destructionpod.com. Let us know how much you love us. And, of course, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. But, yeah, that has been us for this week. I've been your host, Rudy Edsel. I've been joined by Andrew Clark.
Cheers, Rudy.
Dan Fisher.
Thank you, Rudy.
Chris Alloy.
Thank you, Rudy.
We'll see you next week.